Hi there folks, welcome to the Test Drive Radio, the one-stop podcast channel for all the software testing enthusiasts out there. We are thrilled to bring you the latest insights and knowledge about the ever-evolving world of testing and leadership. A huge shout out to BrowserStack for being our annual sponsor for small events and premier sponsor for conferences. So join our tribe of passionate individuals who share the same love for testing and leadership. Without further ado, let's dive straight into the latest trends and best practices in the testing world.
We discussed about elemental locators and layer strategy. One of the factors of which leads to a lot of automation maintenance is also environments, right?
Yeah.
Right. Environments change while we do in-house, when we set up in-house machines to move to cloud migration, on our local machines to, let's say, server side. So how do we handle environment issues effectively to optimize our test maintenance effort?
Yeah, this is another great question, because many a times there are environmental factors, even if the automation code is running fine, and it's the environment which adds additional layer of concern because of which automation might fail, and it can add to the testing cost, or it can add to the failure analysis cost. Now, when we, in good old days, when we used to have in-house environments, these machines were very easily accessible. And it's a invested cost in terms of playback environments. Okay. Even then, there used to be problems like machine not behaving correctly when the playback is going on, or there's some surprises where you have false alarms and automation not working fine. So test environment definitely creates some amount of distraction for clean playback to happen. Now, you can avoid all these things if these environments are sanitized and maintained correctly. Now, this sanitization can be there are scheduled jobs. Like many a times you have antivirus updates and browser updates and OS patches, and suddenly you find that the playback is on and there's something that goes wrong and it actually hogs the network bandwidth. And you don't realize that because these are mostly the unattended runs. And you look at the failure report in once you come back next day, and you find that how come this something just did not work correctly. It's lack of CPU or lack of memory or lack of network bandwidth. And it cannot be even investigated because nobody goes down to machine level to see the event log as to what went wrong on the machine. Now, so that kind of sanitization is important. And one of the things that we used to do in the good old days when we had this bare metal machine playback, every time we hit upon an issue, we used to add it to a checklist that, okay, so if I'm getting a new environment which is going to be used for playback, we need to make sure that all the other problems that we had gone through in the past are corrected. There's no antivirus running at that time. There's no other updates going to happen. The CPU is correct. The disk space is correct. There has to be disk alert. If it is 70% full, there has to be an alert that playback cannot happen because the result folder will not get created. So there are multiple small little things in the periphery where automation is needed in terms of test environment so that you can have a clean playback. Now, when we move from bare metal machines to cloud, it's another journey altogether. This was still an invested cost, so you could use the machine any number of times and
correct. You can just add more machines.
You can add more machines
and just take lab space. Absolutely. Add more machines.
Now, the moment you go to cloud, it's like a prepaid, postpaid plan, and you know that you have to be correctly utilizing the cloud hardware, and every additional dollar spent has to be utilized to find defects and not fragility. So we have to be careful when we make use of cloud infrastructure. And similar kind of mechanism where you take the right image backups. When you take those image backups, you need to ensure that all my testing dependencies, testing libraries are correctly present on that ecosystem. Similarly, if you're having application under test also in the cloud infra, the network connectivity between the playback infrastructure and your application under test is properly maintained in a single VPC and so on. then if at all there are libraries related to you want the exact display resolution or so, or there are certain things you need on the machine that gets spawned, then all those dependencies also have to be added. When we move from EC2 machines to EKS, there's another layer that gets added. And when we do that, we need to make sure all the CPU memory and the network configuration is correctly configured to make sure it helps the parallelism with which you're going to take the test automation run. It might come as a surprise that you start a 3-4 thread run and the CPU is entirely hogged and the automation playback fails. So a right configuration of all the components, because you're basically utilizing the host machine infra. Second important thing when it comes to container playback is mounting the drive from the host machine correctly so that you can persist the output logs. These machines get destroyed once the playback is over, and the logs will get lost once the playback ends. So either you have a database connection so that you persist the results, or you just take the log folder before you destroy and put it on an S3 or some other drive. So there has to be a mechanism where you persist the kind of data that gets collected. And it's also essential to collect the logs. So one of the things that we have done is we have recently put our log information in Prometheus and Grafana, where it is directly connected to the main Loki server, and the data itself gets backed up in the log server. So that way, you know that when the infrastructure is destroyed, I have all the logging mechanism at one place, and I can correlate my application logs, the automation logs, and then it helps me debug at a faster pace.
That's true. I think, again, a great answer. Your answers are very technical, yet so understandable in that respect. This is a question from Parvez, and there are two related questions. I'll put both of them on display here. Okay, before you attempt answering, this is from Parvez, who is a test manager at BNP Paribas, I think, from your city, Mumbai. How to keep automation up to speed with rapidly changing application in today's agile world, which is one question. Another related question from Ranish is similar. With most of the teams focusing on in-sprint automation, which is like the Achilles heel we all are trying to solve for, right? Okay. It feels sometimes you are rushing to automation, which leads to rushed test script code merges of lower quality. And it's on how to counter this. So both questions related, how do we handle automation / its maintenance at a faster pace?
Yeah, these are really great questions. And it's like feeling nostalgic about, yeah, there was a state that we learned the hard way as to how we can really curtail the maintenance cost, which come up with a rush R release certification. So what we have done is we can have a better upstream downstream strategy for test automation. Now, what it means is that in the value stream, when the user stories are getting groomed, which is the upstream part of the sprint planning, at that point of time, we basically get our tech leads talk to test leads to find out automation impact of a user story. Because when they are like the upstream value stream itself is split into various columns, like you basically have to define a high level design, then NFR impacts. At the same time, you also impact for whether there will be any impact to existing automation inventory. And if you have that kind of impact, then you estimate for like how many APIs will get impacted, let's say business APIs or automation keywords will get impacted if this kind of a change is brought in. Many a times user stories have information about UI UX refactoring. These are very easy target to estimate and anticipate that there is going to be automation porting effort needed so that you can shake hands with the developer, try and understand that when this card is picked up for the next sprint, I am prepared that I'm going to keep aside time to fix the porting of the automation. So during upstream, when you have this kind of collaboration between developer and tester, it definitely helps correctly estimate for test automation. Now, in the downstream, when you actually pick up cards for implementation, the development team would start working on the code. Testing team will start automating it, right? So during that, one of the process that we do is we basically ask the developer tester to discuss test cases. Now, when they discuss test cases, and this is prior to writing the first line of code, when they discuss the test cases, they basically tag every test case whether at what layer it should get automated. There can be test cases which are, let's say you're developing one additional form in the application. There are basic checks and balances for the form. Then they will prescribe that these kind of checks and balances should be built into the Jest layer or the Mocha layer on the client side. Or something can be just a configuration property if it is like a React kind of a UI or so. It doesn't really need automation. So when you have that kind of collaboration between the developer and tester, you can very well articulate in terms of how you can maintain a test pyramid at the user story level. With that, you know and understand that, okay, I will need one or two end-to-end scenarios that may be within the context of this particular story or within the context of multiple stories taken together. And when you limit the functional test automation itself, it will become manageable to be done within the context of the sprint. And what is happening is these kind of discussions happen before even the implementation begins. If you follow that kind of pattern, it may not be 100% followed, but let's say even if you follow it to 60-70%, there's a lot of groundwork that you can start early enough in the sprint cycle so that you can carefully keep your own analysis ready as to when this kind of user story gets committed. These are 5 APIs that I'll have to refactor. Why not just start working on developer's machine, local URL or so, see how much is changing. You can interact with them and tell them that if it is possible for you, not change the selector, just revamp the CSS. It will not get my automation. It will not allow my automation to fail. So when you collaborate in that fashion, you can curtail down a lot of to and fro that happens.
God, yeah.
Where a lot of wastage can be really curtailed. And automation, you'll be able to complete at least 70-80% of functional test automation, which is needed for the sprint.
Interesting. I think the collaboration point is really well, and which brings me to my next question in general. It's easier said than done, right? Collaborations with developers. There is a industry-wide trend of a little friction between the two. It works on my machine. It doesn't work on my machine. I don't know. Memes keep flowing, right? There's always that that level of initial friction, which is there. How do testers and developers collaborate in general? Because I have a hypothesis that each one of them is trying to optimize for themselves. And how do we inculcate a culture of that we are optimizing for a common goal, which could be product delivery on time? So how do we inculcate that culture? And how can we collaborate better?
Absolutely. The overall so in case of test automation or functional test automation primarily, you need to put as much as effort which is needed for any other software development. Now, if there's a good level of collaboration between the developer and the tester, I think the amount of maintenance overhead and like we discussed for the previous question, a lot of wastages can be avoided. Because ultimately, we are working to get the user stories which are planned for the scope of the sprint ready for the production. Now, if there's a hide and seek which is going on, that okay, I'm going to develop and I'm not going to tell you anything about
coding. Yeah.
And once my coding is done, only then you can come to me and I'll give it to you for testing. Then till the time the developer, the tester reports something, that certain things are not working. The developer has already picked up another story and has to say that, okay, I'm in the middle of some other detail. I don't have time to look at the problems you're telling. And when the developer comes back and says, okay, show me, reproduce the problem on my laptop or reproduce the problem on my machine, then again, there is a tussle that goes on. I think if there is a hide and seek game, then nobody wins in such a game. I think it's essential for the tester equally to act as a facilitator. You are not just doing manual testing or exploratory testing for a particular story or just doing the functional test automation for that story, but you need to take a holistic responsibility of building the test pyramid for the story. It's like taking charge of the test strategy for a smaller piece in the overall outcome that you're trying to achieve. Now, when that kind of mindset change happens, automatically the conversation improves from a different perspective. It's not that I'm sitting here only to catch bugs for you, but I'm trying to be a facilitator for you so that this story goes out to, say, staging without bugs, less work for you in terms of debugging in later environments. Wow. So closer you are towards testing when it is locally on a developer's machine, it's simpler to debug, it's simpler to fix, because the developer is still not lost the context of information, is still putting his own efforts in that story. So I think if that kind of collaboration happens, it becomes equally beneficial for the tester, because let's say you're developing automation for it and you collaborate well, you can develop your test automation. In fact, you can ask for help in terms of certain technicalities which might be needed. If at all certain things are failing, you have to equally go to the developer to understand certain logs, correlate certain logs, and then you can find the information more easily. If it was always waterfallish, it's going to pile up.
It's going to pile up.
Even if we say we are doing agile and we have done sprint planning and we are doing user stories one after the other, it's always going to be a rushed situation the moment you come closer to the release deadline. Because most of the user stories are not tested. You have not done the test automation. You have kept it for the last day. Now everybody tries to do automation on last 2 days. And automation, you don't get time for automation because you get into bug finding cycles. The moment you get into bug finding cycles, even the developers get into bug fixing cycles.
There's no testing.
There's no focus to even exploratory testing. The focus is given to coding mistakes on both the sides, automation side as well as on the code side. Whereas coding mistakes are easy to avoid. If you give right perspective in terms of the initial discussion, like even if whether you follow TDD, then it's the best. But if you don't follow TDD, at least have test case discussion prior to writing the first line of code.
Correct.
Because the moment you have those possibilities discussed within the context of the story, the kind of design you will come up with will have less bugs. You have the tester is there to think of all possibilities, how he can crack and make your story fail. He can give you enough conditions that's what they have been trained always for.
Yes, been trained always.
Positive scenarios, negative scenarios, and number of possibilities. But when you work from the context as to what can be various functional flows, what can be unit level positive, negative flows, and you are discussing it within a very small construct, only the construct of your user story, things are much more manageable. And it's not that you need to involve multiple different people. The moment you get into next environment, it's not just your own code. You're mixing it up with multiple different stories taken together. And the amount of time it takes to debug a failure is going to increase exponentially. So I think collaboration, when we talk about agile and we talk about trust.
It's rooted in collaboration.
We talk just in terms of words. But when it comes to learning, we don't really follow it. If you start following what you read about Agile or what you hear about Agile, it will change the way you start start delivering those user stories.
That's true. And I think workplace conflicts are natural. They will continue to happen, whether it's between developer, tester, manager, subordinate. It will continue to happen. There is a mandate or there's an understanding of that we have to blend and not clash, it'll work well in general. That's the thing. We have a lot of questions coming in, and please go ahead.
Just one point I thought of adding. And now, apart from just collaborating between dev test, I think one more aspect that we add, we have added in our value stream is also getting the user stories reviewed by the design team. Many a times it is very late in the feedback cycle that when you go for demos or before the end of the sprint, you find that there are certain feedbacks which are given where you have to again go ahead and revamp the UI side or again make some changes to it. Rather than delaying these things for the last, when you say you do it left shift, it is basically within the context, you know that you're more or less done with the user story and you have thought of getting a closure on it. It is that time you start testing. So it's basically when you say continuous testing, you shift left to the extent possible that, okay, the code is ready, the design is ready. Now let the UI UX designer come and review your story there and then. Before you lose, as a developer, you lose your context, you get those validations or you get those verifications done that the story has been correctly built holistically. So that you don't have to come back to it again and again once you get on to the next one.
Thanks for tuning into today's episode. I hope you enjoyed and gained some valuable insights. Don't forget to rate us and join our community on Discord for more amazing content. Link in the description. So till next time, keep testing with passion and leading with purpose. This is us signing off.